everybody. Welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I'm here as I always am with Dom, a.k.a. Big D. Big D, how's it going?
It's not going well. My hero, my prince, has fallen. I didn't know if I would be in a fit emotional state to do this podcast today. I really haven't felt this broken up inside since One Direction split up. But I have managed to hold myself together, and I'm here for all of you. And I hope you're all here for me.
How many members are there in One Direction, and how many can you name? And maybe this would have been a more appropriate question for the Stephen Fishback boot episode.
Oh, well, actually, okay. So there's Harry Styles. There's Zayn Malik.
I knew those two, but I don't know. Isn't there a Liam, too?
There's Liam, and it's the fourth one. I'm not going to say the poor fourth guy in One Direction, because he probably has like $20 million by now, at the age of 15 or however old he is. But, you know, he always seems to be the one that people forget. So apologies to whatever his name is, and I'm sure he'll get over it, though.
I'm sure he's heartbroken, yeah. All right, we are here, of course, to talk about the latest Survivor episode. And I'll put it out there right up front. I think this one's probably going to be a bit quicker. And I know I always say that when we go for 2 hours, but I really do believe genuinely, deep down and from the bottom of my heart this time, that there's really, first of all, just not that much to talk to. And second of all, we have kind of a schedule conflict where we have plenty that we can be getting to in future weeks that is just not necessary this week.
Yeah, boring episode, and it's past my bedtime, so let's just get this done as soon as we can.
Yeah, sorry. But here we go. Let's get into it. We last left off with our double episode where Stephen Fishback was the boot. And actually, before we get into this new episode, I just very quickly do want to say one thing, which is when editing our episode last week, it came across to me like I was not giving Stephen as much, I was not being clear about how much benefit of the doubt I genuinely do give Stephen in most situations. And I just also want to quickly add for the record that I think under normal circumstances, despite how this may have gone down and how it may have ended for him this time, I still do definitely believe that Stephen is one of the best players we've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't think he embarrassed himself this season by any means. And the way that his role in the story was set up, you know, they had to edit him quite poorly in the first half of the season, or at least emphasize the negative aspects and make him look like a buffoon at times. And so, you know, I think had they dialed down this half of the season a bit more and then not been as uncharitable to him, I guess, in the first half of the season, you'd have a more balanced picture maybe. But yeah, I think he did pretty well for himself. Obviously, the way he went out was kind of embarrassing in one sense, but he went down swinging. He made a big play and got punished for it, which I think is the way he would want to go if he wasn't going to end up winning. And I think he played decently well, was a good character, so not much more you can ask for, I think. And
yeah,
I know there's been some like Twitter drama or whatever, but he seems decently happy about the way things played out here, so maybe that will change come finale night, but we'll see. And I'm sure we will talk to and about Stephen a lot more in due course.
Yeah, and you know, he had that confessional. I think it must have been in the premiere where he said, like, I'm going to be playing this game really aggressively, and it's either going to work really well or I'm going to flame out spectacularly. And I had, you know, been trying to reconcile why he was coming across on TV so much, at least for my money, so much differently than he seems to come across in real life and on Twitter and so forth, on know-it-alls and so forth. And I was chalking that up to him potentially being the losing finalist again. Now, after seeing it play out, I think it makes sense when he goes in there as the know-it-all, and then that's the way he ends up leaving. I understand them giving him kind of like a wacky edit. Maybe wacky is even the wrong word. Like, cause I think it was really super complex, and there was way more to it than just look at this guy not being nearly as good as he thinks he is. Because I think there was way, way, way more layers to that. And we talked a lot about that already. But I think that at least makes more sense now why he could potentially still not be the losing finalist and still come across a little more poorly than I would have expected.
Yeah, I know that in strict game terms, a loss is a loss, and second place is basically tied for last place, leaving aside any money that you win. But for Stephen, like, psychologically, he would rather go out in like a big blaze of glory than to be just another person who got picked off because someone like erroneously saw them as a threat, like Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah, I mean, I told the story, I think it was preseason, of the kid in my fantasy league who went 5-8 both of his first 2 years in the league and finished in eighth place both years. And entering this season, the last record he won, he said he would have rather gone 4-9 than 5-8. I'm proud to report that he pulled a Stephen Fishback and is about to go 2-11 in a distant 10th place. All right.
Let's get into it. I mean, if nothing else, Stephen can say he didn't lose in the finals to the Golden Boy again.
Right, yeah. So that's really a win, I think, for Stephen. If it's not going to be $1 million, that's probably the biggest win he can get. All right. So let's get into the fallout of Stephen leaving, where Spencer gets back to camp here. And he knows he wants to talk to Jeremy. He doesn't want to be a game bot, but I think he does a good job here where he tells Jeremy basically, you know, it's going to be just like it has been, where we're just going to be picking up the pieces. And this is what I was hoping to see. I think I said last week that what I wanted to see from Spencer is they get back to camp. And he says, okay, Jeremy, that had to be done, but now it's you and me, and here's why it has to be that way. And it looks like that's how it worked.
Yeah, and that's a very good impulse to have, I think. We do have this recurring thing in Spencer's edit, though, where it's like we get another rendition of, I am going to have feelings this time. I'm going to open up to people. I'm going to be more human and more personable. But it's like, it's purely instrumental. He's doing all of that so that he can get in people's good graces and so that they'll trust him when the time comes to knife him in the back. And it worked perfectly with Steve.
How do you think he's doing it?
Yeah, I mean, that's why he's doing it and why it works so well. But yeah, I don't think all of this stuff is really true to character, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jeremy is someone in particular, and I think Spencer would definitely be able to anticipate this, that Jeremy is someone I think you can be more comfortable kind of screwing over. And the example I've always given was like Matt Hoffman from Big Brother is like a juror. Just anyone who prides themselves as being like a rational juror, you can be more comfortable screwing them over because they're going to be almost eager to look past that and give their vote to the person who deserves it. And I think similarly, Jeremy in the game is someone that Spencer can have an easy time saying, look, I know that you're probably not happy about how it happened, but here, let me explain why it went down, and I had you in mind, and we can go forward from here.
Yeah, so that can happen. I think the danger is often those people who pride themselves on being like the rational juror and voting based on the game, they will vote based on the game, but they'll find a way to like twist it in their head and rationalize it so that it makes sense why they're not voting for you. So, oh, I'm not bitter that you blindsided me, but that wasn't a good move for you, so I'm not going to vote for you. Like you get you reasoning like that coming in.
RC is the classic example,
yeah,
right?
Of course. And I'd like to think that Steven won't be acting like that, but you can never tell. And we've seen people who you would expect to act in a different way end up in that same kind of position because, you know, they don't want to admit themselves that they are angry that they lost, so they find some like tortured explanation for why it has to be the case.
I feel like Steven is someone, first of all, I think he's voting for Jeremy over anyone else.
Yeah.
And after that, maybe he's leaning, maybe Tasha or something, but I'd really think his vote could be up in the air beyond Jeremy.
Yeah, and I think that Jeremy, based on what we've seen so far, and you can debate the whole saving Steven with the idol thing, but I think he has played the best game so far. However, let's say he gets to the end with Spencer or with Kelly, and one of the two of them might conceivably have a case that they played better. I don't know how willing he would be to entertain that as opposed to, well, Jeremy played the best, and also he happens to be my best friend and ally out here, so why not reward him with my vote?
That's what I mean. I think if Jeremy's there, he is 100% going for Jeremy.
And I don't think that's even an irrational thing to do, leaving aside wanting to give your friend some money, because like if you've been working with someone the whole game, you know how they think. You were there for the decisions that they made. And so if they come up with some brilliant idea, you will be privy to that. Whereas if Kelly has come up with some marvelous scheme to save herself and manages to put that into effect, well, if you weren't there for that, you don't know just how big a part she played. And same goes for anybody else. And so it, you know, based on the information you have, it can be rational to think that your friends played better than they did, but also it's convenient that you would want to do that in any case.
Right. And I mean, I think it's arguably rational that or at least I have no problem with someone saying, hey, Jeremy played an idol on me and it completely bailed me out and gave me another life in the game. I'm voting for Jeremy. Like, Jeremy earned my vote.
Yeah, I don't really mind what your reasoning is as long as you're upfront and honest about it. Like, if you're voting for someone because you like them, great. I mean, I would want to see someone I like take home the win, take home the money, but don't, like, couch that in terms of, oh, well, actually, there's some other reason behind it.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get to this reward challenge now. It is, of course, we knew entering this episode it was going to be the loved ones. Probst does this pretty ridiculous attempt at trying to psych them out and getting them to think that the loved ones would not be there. Someone please, 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 at True Dork Times, Jeff Pittman, if you're listening, or at Rob Speck Fact Checker, whoever you are, tweet me this information. I know there was one season where they did not bring them out. I want to say it was Fiji, but I'm not positive. Or maybe you, Dom, know this, but I'm not banking on that. I feel like every time they've given them some loved ones.
Yeah, it sounds familiar now that you say it, and I'm racking my brain quickly trying to think of it, but I'm not sure what it is.
I want to say it was in the teens. I'm pretty sure it was in the teens.
Yeah, I'm sure if we like went down them one by one, we would remember. But
who was Earl's loved one? Can we think of Earl's loved one?
Or like Yao Man's Love One, Dreams' Love One. It might be Fiji, but okay. They just didn't do it.
Okay. All right. Well, point being, I don't think he's ever going to get away with, like, I don't think we will ever see another instance of them not doing the Loved Ones. I think that's completely off the table.
Yeah, I think the question is, when does this come? Because it could be you're going to get a letter or something from home, and then the family visit is going to come later. And actually, Final Eight is earlier than they have done it for quite a few seasons now. So coming into this challenge, certainly, I would not be expecting that I'm going to get to see my girlfriend, my wife, whatever, when I get there.
No, that's a very good point. Like, they had been putting it off for a little while. And I think, like, that is how you decoy them into thinking that they're not going to bring them out. Like, Spencer told us that he actually bought that they were not going to have Loved Ones because they got to Final Four and they'd never brought them out that late to speak of that I remember. And, you know, that's how they got the element of surprise. But I would still be super, super floored unless, like, some major sponsor pulls out and they have to, like, drastically cut production costs. I would be super floored if we ever do not see Loved Ones again.
I can imagine that if they schedule the Loved Ones visit and then there's some twist which impacts that in some way. So, like, do you want to forfeit your Loved Ones visit for a chance to compete for immunity, which is what we thought it was going to be a few weeks ago? Or, you know, one person has to make a choice between seeing their loved one and something else for the good of the team, or something like that you can imagine coming into play.
I think, at least in particular with this season, and maybe I'm just saying this because they set up a couple of stories that made air because of how the Loved Ones thing played out. But I feel like, particularly on a season like, especially where there are going to be people like, they're their blood versus water partners, there are stories that they actively want to be telling through the Loved Ones visit, I think. Like, I think CBS really likes it, that so they don't want people not getting their loved one.
Of course, but it's fun to think about, like, okay, Joe, either you get to see your dad or the rest of the tribe doesn't get the shelter that we've got the construction crew to come out and build. Like, something like that could be fun to see.
I definitely agree. It could be very, very fun to see.
Maybe this is just, like, the sadistic way I think, but I can imagine watching that and enjoying it.
Well, it is kind of like, hey, if we want to actually put some stakes on this new shelter, let's put some stakes on it. Yeah. All right. So let's go through these loved ones. We start off with Val. Update on a previous report from this podcast. Turns out pregnant women can fly, Dom.
I don't know how far along her pregnancy she was, so maybe that plays a part in it as well. But, yeah, Val is out there, and the two of them, to their credit, I imagine had discussed beforehand. Like, we're going to give no hints of what our situation back home is at all.
Yeah, she did a really good job keeping it, quiet and low-key. I'm positive that they definitely did talk about it ahead of time, because I'm sure Jeremy would definitely, he's just the type of guy who would, of course, run something like that by Val, but definitely a heads-up play nonetheless. It was just cool seeing Val back again, even though we didn't get to see her go back to camp. We get Tasha's cousin, who I really liked. Any thoughts on Tasha's cousin or on Spencer's Got a Girlfriend, Marcella, a.k.a. the young lass?
My only thought on that is, so for the secret scenes this week, they also uploaded these clips of the loved ones talking about their corresponding person in the game. And I think everyone got one except Marcella. So I don't know what's going on there. But the young lass not getting her own video. So we said 2.5 months ago now that whole thing with Spencer and Jeremy and Spencer saying, I didn't tell my girlfriend I loved her and so on, you could book it in right there that Spencer was going to be there for the family visit. And as heartwarming as this was to see, I think this officially marks the end of Spencer's girlfriend immunity. So all bets are off now. And if Spencer's name does come up as a target, we know that's not necessarily going to be a decoy anymore.
Right. Yeah. I was really, really hoping that the loved ones weren't going to be there until like Final Four again, or at least give me the finale at least, right? For the loved one. Why are you flying out 8 people? Be cheaper.
Yeah. And likewise, Joe's dad, Joe says he wants to see his dad out there. So you can be pretty sure that unless there's some tragic aspect to it where Joe falls one challenge short of seeing his dad or something like that, you could be pretty sure they were going to get their reunion out there. And so they did. But then, of course, Joe doesn't serve any use for the story anymore, and so he's promptly cut down and voted out.
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty heads-up play to throw in the bit about his dad, and it must have been the premiere, where that's going to be the end of Joe's story, and that's at least a nice ending, a nice little bow for Joe's arc here, you know, given that it's realistically going to end with him passing out.
Yeah, it would be sweet if you could legitimately affect the future like that. So in the premiere, you could just say, well, when I get the $1 million check on finale night, I'm going to see my dad again or something. And, you know, of course, there's no way I could possibly lose now. I just won it automatically right there.
It's the same thing as, like, Steven acknowledged. Once you even put it out there in the cosmos, in a confessional, that you feel safe, that's it. You're done that night. Yeah. All right. We get Abby's mom back again. She was really good, and she was great on Philippines as well. Dom, question for you. You're a worldly guy. Why do they speak why do they speak Portuguese in Brazil instead of in Spanish everywhere else in South America? What war is that a result of?
So, at the risk of offending various nationalities and continents, I'm going to guess it's because Portugal invaded Brazil at some point, and there was some territorial dispute there.
That seems like a good guess. I thought you would know which war it was. Yeah.
How am I meant to know that?
I don't know. You've left me seriously questioning the value of an Oxford education now. Yeah. All right.
Let's see. I'm on Wikipedia right now. Apparently...
Keep making that sound. That was a good time killer, that little beatbox, whatever you're doing.
And you talking about how it's a good time killer is also a good time killer. So I'm sure the people listening have just no idea that we're not carrying on as normal right now.
Right, and you talking about me talking about it, and now me talking about that is also really an effective way to kill time. How long does it take to look something like, how bad are you at Wikipedia?
So meta. Well, apparently, it turns out, talking while reading is not a very effective way of absorbing information. But
okay.
Let's see. Oh god, dead air. This Wikipedia page is not good.
Brazil's?
It's Brazil-Portugal relations, which you think would cover it, but apparently not.
All right. We've wasted way too much time on this. This is how we're going to spend the time on the podcast that we're trying to get done quickly, is looking up stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with Survivor on Wikipedia while on air. Okay, do we have any... Can we put this on the back burner as we move on, and then you can look that up as I do some two-minute rant about something later on?
We can, yes.
Okay, sounds good. More on that potentially later, but probably not. Up next, the other big D, Keith's wife. Some people were surprised not to see Wes. I, for one, was not. I mean, it's the guy's wife. He clearly is going to be his number one pick, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would love to see Wes, although I imagine if it's any kind of cooperative challenge, Wes is not the guy that you want out there with you.
I don't know. Wait, wasn't Wes really good at one challenge in particular? Didn't he have, like... one shining challenge moment, or I'm maybe completely making that up. I don't remember. Probably a solid 90% of San Juan del Sur at this point. All right, and I guess next we have Farm Guy 69, Dale Wentworth. I was expecting to see Kelly's boyfriend or fiance. I don't even know. I'll tell you right now, of course, I don't care for the guy, but I was certainly expecting to see him out there.
Well, I can imagine that being true for you. For my part, I was hyped to see some Dale Wentworth out there. Big Dale Wentworth fan.
Yeah, it was really good to see Dale back. Dale still bringing the enthusiasm for Survivor, which I always like to say.
Yeah, although as much as I'm rooting for Kelly now, part of me wanted like Dale Wentworth to just say something completely stupid that torpedoed her entire game again. And for her to just rue the day she decided to bring him out there with her.
Yeah, honestly, we'll get to this in a little bit about maybe Kelly should have been throwing this challenge. I think if anyone should have been throwing this challenge, it's Kelly, who's had her dad torpedo a game of Survivor for her, not even 2 years prior. Yeah, Joe... gets his dad out there. Of course, you know, that's a big moment for him. Probably the last happy thing that's going to happen for Joe in this game. His dad, by the way, appears to just be Joe from the future. So it's cool to see what Joe's going to be look and be like in 30 years or whatever.
Yeah, I think we missed out on Steven's like second tier friend, Ben, being his loved one out there.
That would have been good. I thought Steven had a funny line about it, about how it was going to be like, Val, who's telling Jeremy that she's pregnant, and Ben, who's telling Steven how many Twitter followers he has.
Yeah, I imagine it's not going to be anything on the level of assistant coach, unless the Ben in question is Ben Wade, just coach.
Aha, what a twist that would be. That would be great to see coach just randomly show up. And then we have Kimmy end up having her dad come out. I was actually kind of surprised that Kimmy was the last one they brought out. They typically like to bring out the big tearjerker last, right? Why isn't it Val?
Yeah, I guess maybe if you put Val last, then it's addressed as an additional reason for it to be a tearjerker, but I don't even know. I think it was just a fairly random order.
I figure if you go bring out, like, Big D second to last and then Val last, people would get it if it's husbands and wives. So, pretty run-of-the-mill reward challenge. Kelly Wentworth is the big winner. Dale is coming back to camp along with Big D, Abby's mom, and Kimmy's dad. And then also Joe's dad gets to tag along. And this felt like kind of another South Pacific situation where I think it was Ozzy who won the family thing. And they just kept letting him pick people until he picked Sean Hance.
Yeah, and if you're Ozzy in that situation, you obviously save Brandon for last, right? So you force them to let you pick everybody?
Yeah, yeah. And I remember even bringing that up as we were podcasting way back then about South Pacific. What was that, 9 seasons ago?
In our, like, 5th episode or something? Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah, well, Dom, I'm sure people out there are wondering. Of course, we gave, we put Fish back through the ringer last week for winning the individual reward challenge. Was Wentworth wrong to win the loved ones challenge? Because like Spencer said, for the people who don't get picked for their loved one, it's just like a dagger every single time that they're the one not getting picked to have their person come back to camp.
Yeah, and I think the arguments about that have been hashed out time and time again on here, on everywhere else, many, many times by now. But do you think then, Kelly knows all of that stuff. I imagine part of it is just, I really want to spend time with my loved one. But do you think there's some other aspects of that where maybe she didn't think it was going to be a downside, or there were some people she wanted to get some alone time with, or time, I guess, with their loved ones, where it's a lot easier to have this shared bond and this sense of solidarity, maybe?
Yeah, I think generally speaking, winning an individual reward challenge is less bad the worse your position already is in the game, because there's just less damage that it can do to it, right? Where if you're Kelly Wentworth and you're trying to make these new bonds to potentially get something together for an end game, but you currently don't have anything going, there is potentially value in winning the loved ones challenge and picking people that you're trying to gain favor with when the people that you're leaving out already weren't going to work with you.
Yeah, it creates this weird situation where either you take the people that everybody else expects you to take. So here, Jeremy and Val, I imagine everyone else, that was the consensus pick. Like, if you win, we're taking Jeremy and Val. And so if you don't take them, it suggests that there's something else going on here, that you have some ulterior motive, above and beyond the fact that they now look down on you for not taking, Jeremy, who hasn't seen his wife in a month and a half.
Right. Well, it is worth noting, and I know that you do know this, but there are people out there who were a bit confused, apparently, on Twitter about this, that Jeremy, has not told anyone that Val is pregnant. There were people saying, how dare Kelly Wentworth not pick the guy whose wife is pregnant out there and not let them see each other? Kelly did not know, of course. But you may still be onto something, that purely by virtue of being a married relationship, that Jeremy and Val would, take priority.
Yeah, and how dare Kelly Wentworth not take out her life savings to just give it to Joe and apologize for not giving it to him sooner?
Yeah, and one thing I was actually thinking about is, I think in certain contexts, if you want to talk about the idea of a family relationship hierarchy, if you're Terry Dietz and company, I think if there are people out there who are like that, specifically if there are a lot of married people out there and you're not a married person, or your loved one is for whatever reason not your spouse, I think totally play into that and essentially forfeit the challenge and say, I don't even want to do this. You guys should absolutely get to see each other. What a great guy I am, right? And you get to see your wife and suddenly we're great pals.
Yeah, and we do see that hierarchy, even if it's not made explicit, it does seem to come into play. And I think the order goes something like longtime spouses, then, I guess, spouses who have only been together for a short period of time, and then parents, and then other relationships, or I don't know where siblings fit into that, or dead grandmothers, or anything else, but there does seem to be some kind of thing there which you could unpack.
I think the bottom of the list is friend, and then the very bottom is assistant coach. I think that's rankings.
Assistant coach would be top of the list. Like, if I'm out there and someone brings their assistant coach, fair play to them. They can see them for as long as they want.
I mean, can we just think back? I know you weren't even watching. Dom hadn't even heard of Survivor, probably, at the point where this was actually airing the first time. I remember the loved one's visit in Token Chains. Coach was already such an unprecedented character as far as just, just the size of his edit and the magnanimosity, there you go, Oxford boy, of his edit.
Magnanimity, I think you mean.
I think both are acceptable.
Well, let's look.
Let's go. All right, to Wikipedia we go. Let's kill some time here. No. What was I even just talking about? Now I've completely fucked up and I've lost my spot about what I was talking about. The point that was that Coach was just prior to that point, we'd never seen anything close to Coach, that for him to, in earnest, bring out his assistant coach was such an incredible character moment. That's got, I'm sure that's somewhere on the Funny 115, probably in the number one entry of Coach being a character on Survivor.
Yeah, so it turns out magnanimosity is a word.
Thank you.
So congratulations. Also, the fourth member of One Direction is Niall Horan, or was, I suppose, and then... Brazil was colonized by the Portuguese in 1500 up until 1832.
There you go. Don't say you didn't learn anything listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. All right. And incidentally, bad times here to be Marcella, Val, and Tasha's cousin, where you like take a probably a solid week out of your life to go out there and do that, right? And ultimately, you just spend 20 minutes on a bench and get one hug, and that's about it. And then you spend the next 36 hours on a plane.
Yeah, although everything we've heard from people whose loved ones did go out there suggests that it's actually just a fun trip for them, regardless of anything else that happens. Like,
yeah.
they have this long vacation, and they get to know each other quite well. I don't know if that's the case here, but I imagine it was. Also, 1822 for Brazil, by the way, so apologies for any historians out there who are frantically
writing this. I was going to say, I didn't want to correct you. I didn't want to be gauche on air, but yeah. So while these other people are off at their reward barbecue, Spencer now gets some valuable bonding time here. Or potentially valuable bonding time with Tasha and Jeremy. They're the outsiders here on this reward, and they seem, at this point, pretty cool with each other. And Tasha, I think, is really the person this week that we're going to be focusing on strategically, as she seemed to be the one with the big choice to make, at least potentially, where this whole, you know, Witches 2.0 alliance, or I guess just Women's Alliance, at the risk of offending Sarah Freeman, is brewing. And Tasha's been basically invited to both parties. What are you looking up on Wikipedia, such that you are?
I'm looking up if magnanimosity is actually a word.
It's a word. We just confirmed this. And well, I'll tell you how I know it's a word. I'm a huge, huge listener of the 06010 Fantasy Football Podcast, and the former co-host of that used to use it all the time in that same kind of look at how impressive my vocabulary is context.
What if they were wrong? Well, there are lots of people who use big words because they think they sound impressive, but don't actually know, firstly, whether they exist, or secondly, what those words mean.
I mean, I know what it means through context.
I can prove that fact firsthand to you if you like. there are lots of random words which you would never possibly use except to make yourself sound educated, which I only vaguely know what they mean.
Well,
so you can bust those out if you prefer.
The good news is you can find six of them a week in Stephen Fishback's People.com blog. So if you ever want a vocabulary builder, just check that out. Yeah. All right. So really the big question of the week is, will Joe win the immunity challenge? We get to the challenge, and good news, Dom, there is going to be a male necklace and a female necklace and a Keith nail necklace, as it turns out. But before we get there, Wentworth wins for the women. She's definitely going to have her idol with her at a potentially tricky Final Seven spot. More on that later. This challenge, of course, is the one where you're just balancing a statue on a pole. I think we first saw it Final Immunity Challenge in Samoa, where it was really intense between Russell and Brett at the end, although Brett, as it turns out, is not Mike Tyson.
No. They're really going in for these balance challenges this season. Like, it's been like three or four
that?
In a row now. Like, how long has it been since we've had a normal obstacle course or some kind of something that wasn't a balance challenge, basically?
Well, it looks like next week they're going to be doing kind of like a middle season-esque run through some docks and boats in the water kind of challenge. The standard kind of challenge that Ozzy would just tore everyone up at during Cook Islands. But you're right. I mean, I'm pretty sure out of the immunity challenges, haven't all of them been balanced? There may have been one that was not balanced, but I'm certain at least four out of five have been balanced.
Yeah, it's not something that we tend to focus on, but outside of that nighttime challenge, which was fantastic, by the way, I mean, that will go down as one of the best challenges for me, if only because of the setting there. Outside of that, the challenges this season have been fairly bland and uninspiring, I've thought. I couldn't tell you what most of them were. They just don't stick in your memory at all.
Is that different from any season at this point, though? At least for me, it's been a long time since the challenges have stood out to me. I guess, actually, Philippines, I would say, the challenges stood out as, like, particularly good, at least early on.
Yeah, they have got into this rhythm by now, but you would think for their second chance season, where you have this amazing cast and they're really hyping this up, you'd think they would make more of an effort to really excel in that department.
I think they're reusing challenges, right?
Yeah, I mean, not to take away from the work that they do, but if you're going to be picking old challenges, at least pick ones which people liked and remembered and not just generic balance challenge 4 from season 22.
Right, pick old challenges that actually stand out and would be fun and exciting to see again.
Yeah, not going to say you're wrong, by the way, but searching for magnanimosity on Google, I get 2,000 results, which is not very many results.
I think you need to change the way you're looking at the number 2,000. I think take it up with Nate Ravitz if magnanimosity is not a word.
Well, I will make sure to do that then.
All right. So for the male portion of this event, as expected, it comes down to Keith and Joe. And after about 80 minutes, I want to say, Joe does not drop. He faints. And not Dr. Vetus this time. We actually have a doctor also named Joe run over and try to bail him out. This was very scary. I would actually say second only to Russell Swan as far as if I didn't know that Joe obviously went on to live because I knew he was on Twitter months later, I would have been pretty concerned. Certainly in real time, I would have been very concerned. It looked like he took a little while to come to. Yeah. So certainly very scary there. But Joe, as it turns out, is going to be totally fine. His body just needed, I guess, to get blood back up to his head or whatever. Dom, look it up on Wikipedia. We'll tell the people about it in 10 minutes. Keith is your winner. And so Joe, obviously now without the necklace, probably knows he's going to have some work to do. He decides he's going to be pitching Abby to Jeremy as potentially his biggest threat on the grounds that, hey, everyone wants to drag Abby to the end. And there was an interesting thing here. And maybe I'm reading way too much into this, but I thought it was at least very convenient where during this conversation, Joe says something, and Jeremy then says, sitting next to Abby would be easy money, and it gets subtitled on the bottom of the screen, but it's not Jeremy Schoen saying it, it's a constant shot, and then for that one line, they cut to a picture of the ocean, like a bird flying around in the ocean. So, point being, that really could have come from anywhere. And then they cut back to Joe saying exactly. He could have been saying exactly about anything. I think that line about sitting next to Abby is easy money is in there and subtitled for a reason. I've been wondering who the losing finalists are. I think Jeremy has still got to be the front runner to be the winner. At this point, I'm comfortable saying after that, lock in Abby as a losing finalist. Not that that's some bold call. Like, that's probably the easiest call to make.
Yeah, or could it be somebody gets greedy, tries to take Abby to the end as the perfect goat, and then ends up getting burned because of that?
That's definitely possible as well, but I think I'm really waiting. It seems like we always inevitably get set up for why the obvious goat was an obvious goat. And, you know, granted, that's going to be the case in no disrespect, although I guess some disrespect, virtually every scene with Abby. I'm not sure how that's not disrespectful, but I don't know. I feel like this is just kind of an over-the-top way of demonstrating Abby is the person people want to sit next to, and maybe that is something you should keep in mind down the line, you being the viewer.
Yeah, and there is some merit to, if you are one of these big threats like Jeremy or Joe, if there's somebody in the game who everybody else knows that they want sitting there next to them, then you can do kind of what Suri did with Courtney and just think, well, that person being in the game doesn't have any benefit to me. Why not just take them out? And you might normally think, well, that person isn't affecting you in any way, so why do that? But if you know you can beat everybody else regardless and your only goal is making it to the end, then yeah, why not take out someone who everybody else has penciled into their final three plans? And if you remove them from the game, suddenly that shared assumption that everybody has is taken out of play.
I agree with you in theory. I think potentially in practice, at least in this case, the why not do that is because no one wants to do that. They want to take you out.
Yeah, I think you could tell when Joe was making that pitch, it was a pitch of desperation. Yeah. It was, I don't have a good argument for why I should say, let's just throw anything out there and see if it sticks.
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe probably, and you know, we've seen Jeremy all season be someone really interested in buffers, and I for one have always applauded that, particularly for a player like Jeremy, who I think is going to have a hard time getting many free passes in a lot of end games, especially in end games where he's a jury threat. So I'm sure he's someone who would definitely see the value in keeping Joe around if anyone would. But that be, you know, this deep into the game, I am not letting Joe get a free look at Final 7 and being I just watched him win 4 challenges in a row. I'm not interested in that.
Also, one thing you see a lot is when a person on Alliance knows that they just have no shot of winning on the vote, you can tell from the way that they vote eventually that they aren't really putting any further effort into keeping that illusion up, and they're just voting for someone they don't like. Like, the one example that stands out to me for some reason is when I think after the merge vote, when Josh's alliance was getting decimated in Thelma & Dulcer, they just voted for Baylor. Not because there was any realistic chance of Baylor going home, but like, we don't like Baylor, let's just vote for her and make a statement.
No,
and
you definitely,
it's kind of what you see here with Joe and Abby.
Yeah, I'm of course not able to cite any examples off the top of my head because I'm not as prepared of a podcast host as Dom. But you definitely do see that from time to time where someone just kind of spite votes when they know it's 100% they're gone.
If you had old boot lists open on Wikipedia, this wouldn't be a problem. But, you know, some of us did more work than others here, Colin.
I will point out, it is like donation week on Wikipedia. I'm a big Wikipedia user. I'm going to be doing some donating. You should consider that as well.
Yeah, given how much money I give to people who provide me a very lackluster service in return, having the entire corpus of human knowledge at your fingertips, I think, is more than deserving of a few dollars sent that way.
Yeah. One thing we kind of skipped over, but, you know, last season we talked about it potentially being a conspiracy. Was that potentially the case here this season with the double gender necklaces?
I don't think it is, because why would it be? Like, what would they hope to gain from doing that? But it is kind of weird, and I don't know why they would have it at this stage of the game for this vote.
I mean, it's kind of like what we talk about, like, or at least I remember what I talked about with Antonio Mazzaro after the merge, where the number, you know, the best way to prove that merging at 13 was not just to bail out Savage is to keep merging at 13. So the best way to prove that putting in the gender necklaces was not to bail out Mike and Shireen is to just put it in there again at the same or with a similar spot next season. Yeah. So maybe it was just kind of random. Well, that being said, you know, Joe is up for the vote. Is there any real reason for anyone not to be voting for Joe here? I guess Keith, maybe, if he decides he really likes Joe.
So it's kind of tough for Spencer and Jeremy, because if they vote out Joe, and you can talk about how realistic that fear of a women's alliance actually is, but if I'm out there in their position, I would be terrified of that. And I know that if I vote out Joe, it's very clear that it's 4-3. And that's even assuming that I have Keith on my side. Like, I might have Tasha, but if Keith goes over with the women and it's Keith's Angels or whatever, then that's all they need. That's 4 votes right there. And that would make sense for everyone in that position to do. So I would be terrified of that. The thing is, if I keep Joe, I don't see how that really helps me, because I'm keeping in the game someone who, if I give him an inch, he's going to take a mile, and I could end up there at Final 5 or Final 4 thinking, why did I just not take the chance to get this guy out when I had it? And yeah, he could just win his way to the end.
Yeah, it's going to take a really, really compelling reason for me to not boot Joe here. Like, it's certainly if I know that I'm walking right into a blatant down 4-3 situation, I would definitely consider keeping Joe around. But I am really, really not interested in having him run the table on me. One idea is, with Joe gone, if I'm Jeremy, I've got to imagine that if it is the girls against the guys at Final 7, me or Spencer is probably going to be, or Keith, is going to be the favorite to get the necklace, and I still have my idol. If we can just, by using those two things combined, get through the next round and then be at the next vote with potentially the necklace again and force rocks against whichever three girls are left.
I think that's assuming an awful lot. I mean, firstly, that anyone would actually go to rocks in that instance. Like, true, is Spencer going to go to rocks to save Jeremy there? Is Keith going to do that, or Tasha going to do that? Like, I would not be comfortable assuming anything there at all.
Yeah, and I certainly don't like, you know, voluntarily taking a line that relies on you playing your idol the next round. Although I will say, if I'm Jeremy, if I don't have the immunity necklace next round, I'm going to be very tempted to play my idol at Final 7 anyway.
This is weird to me, because it feels like, numbers-wise, Jeremy and Spencer should be dead to rights. Like, the women team up, maybe Keith gets involved there somehow, and Jeremy and Spencer should be the next two big targets. But edit-wise, it feels like one of the two of them, it has to be the big favorite to win, and so I'm guessing either one of them goes on a run, or Jeremy plays his idol at the perfect time, or something happens to really turn that around.
Yeah, you know, I certainly think that anything is still within the realm of possibility. I think, like, we've seen enough out of the players and this whole season that I think alliances could certainly shift into dynamics that we have no idea, that we couldn't even anticipate at this point. That being said, I still think it's probably looking pretty likely that the women band together and one of Spencer and probably, much more likely in my opinion, Jeremy ends up just running the table on them when it matters. Like, Jeremy uses his idol and then wins the last two or three challenges, and that's $1 million. But maybe not, like, I wouldn't say that that's a lock by any stretch. I just think that that's probably the most likely thing that we're going to end up looking at here. I think, honestly, I would What do you think the odds are that next week one of Spencer or Keith is the boot?
It has to be pretty high.
I think it's right? like 80%.
I guess unless Tasha sticks with them for some reason, and also they then have Keith, or it just makes no logical sense to me. Like, and that's the thing, because when you vote out Joe, you know that the situation can come up, but then keeping Joe doesn't seem appealing either. So then, if you're Spencer, do you go back around and think, maybe I shouldn't have voted out Steven when I did? Well, no, because there was this threat of that Bion group just having the majority again. So it's hard to pinpoint where they should have done things differently, I think.
I mean, like, it's just a really tough spot.
Yeah, like, let's say you didn't vote out Wigglesworth, and now we're talking 3 or 4 votes ago. Well, then, I think, as I said, that wasn't a good move at the time. But then, would that actually put you in a better spot here? Like, if Joe has this... this ally who's now like a loose element in the game who has nowhere to go, is maybe that's a good thing for you, but maybe not. It's really hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, he being Spencer had the line when he was talking to Jeremy in the hammock. He said, if we keep Joe, I'm terrified. And if we get rid of Joe, I'm terrified. But I'm guessing, you know, when he was making these decisions about booting, you know, Wigglesworth and Fishback, that he was not going to be, in doing that, playing himself into a losing endgame. Like, I'm guessing that Spencer and Jeremy are probably doing this, booting Joe, thinking that they've got some room to play. And I feel like maybe that's just Tasha doing a good job, or maybe it's Tasha genuinely wanting to go with them. Like, in Steven's exit interview, he said that Tasha, like, legitimately did want to just go to the end with her allies, regardless of what that meant for her winning.
Yeah, and I have to guess that Spencer knew... I mean, even before the season, but certainly coming into the merge here, that eventually his card would be marked and his name would come up and he would have to fight to survive from that point. And the only thing he could do would be to delay that for as long as he could. And I think he's done a very good job of that so far. Like, we saw him post-merge. I think you can make a case that he has played the best game except for maybe Kelly there. Although Kelly, I guess, was on the outs towards the start, so maybe that speaks well for Spencer. But either way, he goes from this position of having to be saved by luck and other people's decisions multiple times pre-merge to being in a very good spot for most of the post-merge game, and now I think that time is running out, and he's getting quickly to the point where he's either going to have to win his way to the end or find some new alliance that's going to serve him well, although I don't even know what that would look like at this stage. Like, he is having to scramble now, and so I don't think the fact that he's now having to scramble is a result of a mistake on his part. It's just the way things were always going to be at some point going into the endgame here.
Right. I think there was just virtually no timeline wherein Spencer was going to find himself in an endgame with beatable allies who were happy to take him. And I think, I know that he knew that entering the season, and that he certainly had plenty prepared for situations where people were just not willing to take him and he had to win out. And, like, there were plenty of things worth considering there. And I think that is exactly right. Like, that's probably what we're looking at, is he's going to maybe be able to, like, finagle his way into an air quotes voting block, to coin a term for this season, for this upcoming week, or maybe week or two. But yeah, absolutely, at a certain point, his number's definitely going to get pulled. But I think when you're Spencer, like, and again, I think he absolutely knows this, all you can do is put yourself in a position to, like, get into a favorable spot to run the table sometimes in, like, final six or final five forward.
Yeah, think how sick Jeremy's spot would be here if he hadn't blown his cover with the Steven idol, and he goes into Final 7 with two idols in his pocket and nobody really suspecting him of anything.
Yeah, I mean, it would be pretty remarkable. And not only no one suspecting him of anything, seeming to be on pretty good terms with most people, like, even to this point, and maybe it's because he's just getting such a glowing possible winner final, winner edit, is the reason that we're not seeing it. But it looks like no one's even really considering targeting Jeremy at any point. And I don't know if they've seen Jeremy's abs, but that's not a six-pack that I'm interested in bringing with me to any kind of final immunity challenge. So I guess one question worth asking, or maybe not even worth asking, is, was there anything Joe could have done differently? And I guess just general parting thoughts on Joe.
I don't see how Joe could have saved himself here. And we said preseason, you're going to get from Joe exactly what you got from Joe last time. Like, he's going to win challenges, he's going to be a threat, and then when his day comes, there's not going to be much he can do about it. And he's going to go out in roughly the same spot that he did last time. And he made it one or two votes further here, but that basically played out as we and everybody else predicted. And so I guess if you liked Joe, then seeing more of the same was a good thing. But for us, it's just like, well, okay, this is fun to watch to a point, but then why is this guy on the season if it's just going to be the same as before?
Well, I think the reason he's on the season is because everyone in America seems to be in love with Joe because of how he is on the season. But by that same, because of how he is on the season, this is always how he's going to be. You're not wrong, in my opinion. Like, he's always going to be basically a free pass to the merge, and then roughly as soon as he loses a challenge, he's going to be gone post-merge.
Yeah, Shireen is not in love with Joe, apparently, so it's the more Dirty 30 infighting there. Not really surprised at this point, I guess, but...
the Dirty 30 needs, like, they need a reality show just following the Dirty 30.
Well, they kind of got that already, didn't they?
Yeah, but it wasn't good. They needed, like, a legitimately well-done one where Mike's not just being completely glossed or, you know, completely airbrushed the whole time.
Yeah, we need a reality show for them where they don't get given $1 million for their bad decisions. Just, right. You know, just they get given what they want, which is fame and attention, and then we can just let them do what they want.
Right, I want to go out. I want to follow Rodney out on a night in the town in Boston on one episode, and then I want to go pump some gas with Will and Monifa at the next episode. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, but as you said, aside from Shireen, everybody seems to love Joe. So what do you think is actually behind Joe's enduring popularity other than being an attractive white guy on Survivor?
I think he's just a really nice guy who's just, like, pretty laid back and easy to get along with and at least very, you know, at the very least good at pretending to be interested in other people. And maybe he is genuinely interested in other people. And for that reason, like, that's why Joe is almost always going to get a free pass to the merge. We certainly see plenty of strong, athletic guys get booted pre-merge in Survivor, and it just feels like that's not really on the, you know, like, Shannon Elkins, to use an extreme example, and that's obviously just not on the table for Joe. Like, he's never going to be the Matt Quinlan, to use another example, where he's overplaying. Like, I think everyone's virtually always going to be comfortable with Joe, the same way I would say about, like, Malcolm, to use a pretty obvious comparison.
I would like to see Joe take some kind of heel turn, where he just becomes like this racist, sexist, just overbearing asshole that no one can stand, just for the space of one episode, and then it's back to normal again, and you think, well, did I just imagine that, or was, you know, what's actually going on here? And if you listen to Shireen, apparently that's what he is just in real life anyway, so if you believe that, then fine.
Let's reiterate that caveat if you listen to Shireen.
Well, yes, quite.
But I mean, that's just so, as far as I can tell, that's so far off the table for Joe. Like, it's, to me, like, the most offensive thing I can cite, and I use offensive very loosely, is Joe not doing RHAP pre-season for the campaign interviews. Like, what's Joe ever done wrong or said wrong?
He was, I won't say bitter, but he was quite strong about certain things in his exit interviews, I guess. Although, some of that was a response to Abby just, you know, going ham on him, which was fantastic, by the way. I'm not an Abby fan, necessarily, but I'm starting to appreciate her when she does show up again now.
Yeah, oh, I mean, listen, I think there are... I gotta stop saying listen so much. It's very condescending. Look, Dom, I think there's very... That's a vast, stark improvement. There's very little better than a goat who knows that they're just getting their free pass, right? Like, where Abby knows that no matter how she behaves on the beach, there's virtually no way she's leaving. And she doesn't really care, because she's not interested in winning. That's abundantly clear and always has been.
Very Obama-esque with the look there. I like that a lot. But I think with Abby, I don't think it's a coincidence that the early part of the season, when it wasn't that enjoyable, it was because it was so much Abby that it became overbearing. But now that we've had a few episodes where she really wasn't on screen at all for most of it, and she's kind of popping up as this low-key villainous presence again who's randomly deciding votes and causing havoc and everything else, it's much easier to enjoy that now.
Well, I think there's a lot more value when there isn't, like, potentially, like, a cast there to fight back against Abby. And maybe Tasha, I could see getting into it with Abby for sure. But generally speaking, I think Abby is a lot better for TV when she's trying to pick a fight with people, but no one's really engaging her, and the audience is in on the joke of, oh, that's just Abby being Abby.
So that's a good example, actually, of this point that I keep making over and over again, which is, think back to episode 3 or 4 after the first swap. That relationship between Abby and Tasha was one of the most important things of the season. And then as soon as it didn't serve the immediate needs of the episode anymore, it just vanished and we never saw it again. So I don't think anyone who's watching the show could tell you now what the status of Tasha and Abby is out there in the moment at Final 8, let's say. Like, it's just there's no possible evidence we could draw on to make that conclusion.
Well, good news, Dom. There is the previously on Survivor that can always, right when the episode starts, refresh our memories about Tasha and Abby's history whenever it comes up again. And again, like, I know that there are definitely a ton of valid gripes about the way that this season has been edited in general, and like the stuff that they've chosen to show or not show, or how they've presented certain people. I really feel like it's going understated just how tall of an order I think it probably must have been to create like a full season. Not like, I'm not saying they had not enough content. It's not tough for that reason. It's tough because they had so much that, at least I would imagine they did, that I think there's just absolutely no way they could even show 10% of all the stuff they would want to show.
That's a very good problem to have, though, if you're an editor. And I feel like with a cast of this quality and given the events that have happened, to bungle my sports metaphors, the value over replacement episode this season has not been that high. Like, I think if you took a given three-day period out there, took the best events from that, and then put them together in some kind of continuous fashion, that was always going to be pretty good. And it's not to the editor's credit that any given episode happens to be good, but it's to their detriment that an episode is bad when you have all of this material to work with.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, at least for this episode in particular, and maybe this is kind of like an outlier of the season, when it's, you know, everyone obviously understands why Joe would be the clear boot in a lot of different timelines. It's tough to make it look like it's going to be suspenseful. Like, it's impossible for a Joe boot to be a real blindside here. Or to be, you know, like, the best you can ever realistically do is set up, like, some kind of fake story that will hopefully pay off down the line as a convincing decoy.
Well, okay, so given that the Joe boot is obvious, which it is, and this was always going to be one of the least suspenseful episodes of the season, then use that time to do other things. You know, show us more of Keith, who you've basically written out of the show for 8 episodes now, or show us some of these bonds which seem to be important to the way the season's going, but which you haven't made a point of highlighting yet. So yeah, there's lots of things you can do, given that you now have this abundance of free time. And you were saying just now how, well, they can't show everything because there's so much to pack in there, but now there's only the Joe boot, and you can't even do much of that. So why not use this time to its full effect and maximize that while you have the chance?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I would probably, for the Joe boot episode, if I knew where it was, I would probably be trying to set up things to pay off down the line in future episodes and kind of fold on the Joe episode being super compelling. Like, set it up so things make things more interesting in future episodes. Kind of get, like, extra minutes on future episodes, essentially, and cut this one short. Yeah. Okay, so I know we can give our own parting thoughts on Joe, but there is no one who gives better parting thoughts on Joe than the casuals, Dom. What are the casuals saying about Joe?
Yeah, the casuals are outraged that anyone would even dare to stand up to Joe and not just give him the money for turning up in the first place. So everybody who was possibly on the wrong end of Joe is now the target of criticism. So Kelly apparently wanted Joe to die out there. You know, Abby is some hateful bitch who deserves to have death threats sent to her, apparently. Anyone who crossed Joe at any point is now persona non grata.
Can you imagine what it would be like if Rupert came along during the Facebook and Twitter era? Animosity came along during the Facebook and Twitter era. It would just be completely unprecedented. I mean, Twitter would break. The hashtag Survivor would literally overflow.
Let me read what I think is the best comment I've seen so far. And this is, there is strong competition for this, so you know that this person has worked hard. Quote, here's the thought. Maybe all of us are the great fans of Joe and believe that he should have truly been given the chance to make it to the end. We all know that he was going to be picked off for his true ability and therefore have been a worthy recipient of the $1 million. And as a young man that needs to get ahead in life and will never get that million, despite the fact that he was extremely worthy, why should Abby get $1 million? Who would be prepared to sling a sly $20 or so Joe's way to go towards $1 million he will miss out on? And then the same person in the comments immediately after said, Joe Anglin Foundation? This needs to happen, by the way. We all need to, yeah, everyone needs to cough up a few dollars, just spare what you can, and send it Joe's way, because God knows he doesn't have enough in life already.
You can go ahead and send it my way, and I'll make sure it gets to Joe.
Yeah, we have put a donate button on the podcast blog page in case any of you want to take us up on that.
In case anyone's curious, it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the first comment responding to that is, maybe this can be the Survivor first. Fans rewarding a player with $1 million. which you think would be said in jest or with some kind of self-awareness, but absolutely isn't. And I would bet you as much of that $1 million as you like that this person who wrote that comment, voted for Rupert to get the $1 million way back in 2003 now.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, at this point, I could see Jeff saying, for the first time ever, the fans are going to give away $1 million. Like, Jeff has just done this so many times, I think it's all brand new to him over and over.
Yeah, maybe the worst idea that I've had come out of this, and to even talk about it seems risky because I don't want to give them any ideas, is like an Ozzy versus Joe versus Malcolm season or something in that ballpark, which would be absolutely horrific. I mean, if there's anything which would get me to stop watching Survivor, that's on the borderline, I would say.
Yeah, I would be into that. I don't know. There's no way I would stop watching Survivor realistically unless Alison Grodner took it over, in which case I would stop watching in a heartbeat.
The only way I think that I would approve of that is if, you know, at some point Ozzy's going to turn on Joe, or Joe's going to backstab Malcolm, or something is going to happen to drive a wedge between the fans of the different people. So you'd have this entire, like, preteen girl fan base on Twitter dividing into these different factions. Like, the Ozzy fans will start hating the Joe fans. You know, friendships will be ruined. Lifelong enemies will be made. You'll have the entire level of discourse on Twitter between them, which is already pretty low, would sink to new depths as they started just tearing each other apart over, you know, I like Joe and you like Malcolm, so therefore you're dead to me. You know, that's going to be the new standard on Twitter.
I think the solution is clear. Why limit them to one season of Survivor when we could make them two Direction, and those three can be the three that you've heard of, and then Spencer can be the extra one that no one cares about. Yeah.
That is absolutely perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. One random question that I have. I think it's looking, first of all, like a Jeremy win, possible Spencer or Wentworth win. I think Abby's going to be one of the losing finalists. Who else is a possible losing finalist here? Who you got if you had to pick another losing finalist?
I almost want to say Keith, just because, like, for someone like Keith, who is this incredibly vivacious and funny personality, you would want to show as much of that as you can, unless you have to somehow justify why he lost. Like, you don't want to get into a spot where Keith makes the finals, everybody's rooting for him like they did the first time round, and then he goes on to lose, and that sours your appreciation of the season. So I could imagine if Keith gets to the end and it's Keith, Abby, and Jeremy, or Spencer, or Kelly, that could be a very realistic final three, I think.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. For some reason, I feel like Tasha's been pretty visible, and it seems like lately they've been making, like, the number two losing finalist, if Abby's the clear GOAT, they've been making them pretty visible. But she's also been shown, like, certainly disagreeing with people, certainly Abby and Cass at various points. And again, like I mentioned, Steven said in his exit interview that Tasha apparently really did want to go to the end with Jeremy and just, like, let the chips fall where they may. And good, you know, 100,000 chips maybe falling her way, but that's not probably what she was looking for. I actually think I'm going to put Tasha in as my call right now as the other losing finalist.
Maybe. I think she is. She's certainly set up as being this big end game player, but at this stage, that could be basically any spot that's left in the game now. So if she goes out in sixth or fifth, that could mesh with that perfectly fine. Or even if she's the person who fell just short, if she's the fourth place also ran, if you like, that could maybe make sense too. And then there's Kimmy, and I think Kimmy could easily be a losing finalist too. So I think any combination of those people is, I mean, I guess mathematically it has to be some combination of those people. But
yeah.
You know what I mean. I don't think there's any obvious permutation at this stage.
Right. I mean, I think it's basically like a combination lock where the first number is either Jeremy, Spencer, or Wentworth will be your winner. And then the second two digits are they will be beating two of Keith, Kimmy, Tasha, and Abby. And it's just what permutation it is. Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to be getting to this week, Big D? That's going to catch up.
It really isn't. But I think on the topic of getting through boring episodes quickly, why don't we get out of here at this stage?
All right. Sounds good. Thank you guys very much for listening. We only got one more podcast left to do before the finale, if you guys can believe it. And we will be back. Dom, anything else to get to?
Yeah, it's worth talking about that quickly because we have two episodes left now and seven people still to get through. So we're going to have six people left going into the finale. And I believe Redmond has confirmed that. So I guess in recent seasons, what they've done is there's some reward challenge which gives you an advantage in the final challenge or something to that effect. So, yeah. Yeah. So if they do away with that, maybe they have time for this, but this seems like a big departure from tradition, so I'm not quite sure what they have planned. Like, maybe it's like an Eric and Kawamura situation where someone gets taken out immediately, and then you have time for everything else, but who knows?
I hope not. I hope it's just, hey, let's cut the horse shit, let's give people, you know, more game in the finale, and less kind of filler challenges and fond memories of people that we forgot about 2 months ago.
I would rather just have 40 minutes of Final Tribal as opposed to anything else. Like, I would pay to have an unedited, just full-length edition of Final Tribal posted on the CBS website after every season.
I agree in general, but I think it varies greatly season by season. Like, Worlds Apart, I obviously would not rather have a 40-minute Tribal Council on the TV version when we all know that Mike's going to win.
Well, this season you have 10 jurors. It's the largest jury they've ever had, so you have to carve out some amount of time for that, I would guess.
Sure, and that's going to be fine, and I'm guessing that's going to take up a big piece of it. But I, for one, at least, am very excited to be done with any kind of reward challenges or advantage challenges, or your mom is going to come out and you're going to get blindfolded challenges or whatever, you know, things along those lines. I would definitely love to get in an extra round at the finale. I think there's definitely enough time when there are that few, you know, that few people. All right, Dom, let's get out of here. Thank you guys very much for tuning in. We will, of course, be back next week. And that's going to do it. Take care, everybody.